Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Dan Balz is considered one of the nation's most respected political reporters. He's written his review of the last presidential election, What Happened and Why. It's called Collision 2012, Obama versus Romney and the Future of Elections in America. The chief correspondent for The Washington Post, he is the author of several books, including one on President Obama's first election, The Battle for America 2008, The Story of an Extraordinary Election, written with Haynes Johnson. In his new book, Collision 2012, he offers an insider's account of the forces that shaped the political strategies of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, and the flaws and misfires that led to Romney's ultimate defeat. Dan Balz, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. When one of the things that struck me about the book, and let's just start with this, is your use of the word collision. Tell us of why that is so significant and ultimately apt when describing this election.
Well, as I looked at this campaign, I thought it was obviously going to be a different campaign than we saw in 2008. That was, as we all remember, the Hope and Change campaign, but right. It was a campaign of uplift and aspiration. And this was obviously different. And I thought that there were a number of things that suggested a sizable collision. The first was a collision between the America that had elected Barack Obama in 2008 and the America that had elected Republicans as in control of the House in 2010. It was clear that part of what 2012 was about was a clash between those two Americas as to the direction of the country and who they and what they represented. The second collision, if you will, was a collision of ideas and philosophies. Barack Obama and Mitt Romney and the parties they represented had very different views about the economy, what to do about the economy, how you stimulate economic growth, the role of government, the size and scope of government, and many social issues as well. So that was a second. And the third was, it was really a collision between two very different people, two different people whose life experiences almost could not have been more different, if you think of the biographies of the two men, and the shaping of their own view of politics. I mean, Barack Obama as a community organizer on the south side of Chicago, and Mitt Romney as a very successful businessman and venture capitalist at Bain Capital. So it just seemed to me that this set up a moment in American politics unlike one we'd seen in quite a while.
We, of course, talk about you started by talking about the collision, if you will, and the contrast between Obama and Romney. But really, as you point out in the book, the contrast between the Republican candidates in the primary was amazing.
Well, it was, and it was ultimately, I think it was damaging to Governor Romney and his hopes of winning the White House. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, who tried and failed pretty spectacularly to win the nomination, summed up the Republican race significantly when he said in a joking line, "I ran against the weakest field ever, and they kicked my behind." But what we saw in the Republican race was something that I don't think we had seen in a long time, which was almost every candidate had a moment to become the alternative to Mitt Romney. Romney was always the front runner, but not a dominant front runner that we have seen as in some past campaigns, certainly not like George W. Bush was in 2000. And one after another kind of had an opportunity to defeat him. And one after another of those challenges was repelled by Governor Romney. But in doing so, I think he was pushed himself far to the right on a number of issues, whether it was the economic platform that he put out or, perhaps more damaging, what he said about immigration when he uttered the famous line now about self-deportation, that he was left in a more precarious position when he then, after the primaries, had to try to move back and rally the country as a whole rather than simply the Republican base.
You, for this book, you had an extensive post-election interview with Governor Romney. And do you sense that from your reporting for him was a returning point where he felt that he made crucial errors.
He said he made some errors. He certainly acknowledges that the 47% comment that he had made, what he thought was at a private and off-the-record fundraising event in the spring of 2012, but which surfaced as a video in September of 2012. He acknowledged that that was a very debilitating experience. He still was trying to process it all because he did not think he had said what he actually said, and he said he certainly didn't mean what the literal words sounded like. But nonetheless, he recognized that that was a turning point. He thought Hurricane Sandy set back his campaign in the final week. I cite some evidence to suggest that that's probably not at all the case.
Right.
He said that the economy got better in the final stages of the campaign, and that obviously made a difference. And he also said that the Obama campaign did a better job than his campaign in getting their voters out to the polls.
Going back to Hurricane Sandy for a moment, it reminds me, because I thought some of the most fascinating information in the book had to do with Chris Christie. There are some really interesting revelations about the pressure that the Republican Party put on the governor of New Jersey to run for president.
There sure were. I mean, we knew that people were encouraging him to run, but until I went up to Trenton and sat down with Governor Christie to talk about this, I didn't realize how much pressure he was feeling. And in particular, in the summer of 2011, he was asked to come to a breakfast by a number of wealthy New Yorkers and others who were urging him to run. And he said he got there, and at what he thought was a relatively small gathering turned out to be dozens of people, maybe 60 people, he said, lined up in kind of, you know, orderly seating, not a kind of mix and mingle, and a speakerphone on a table and people calling in one by one and asking him or encouraging him to run. The breakfast ended with Henry Kissinger, the former Secretary of State, walking to the front of the room and saying a brief statement. In essence, according to Governor Christie, he said, "I've known X number of presidents. The presidency is about two things. It's about courage and it's about character, and you have both and your country needs you." And I asked Governor Christie, I said, "What were you thinking at that point?" And he said, I was about as speechless as I ever get, which, as we know with Governor Christie, is not exactly speechless. But he said he was quite moved by the event, and he said to the group, "I don't think I'm going to run, but I owe it to all of you to take this seriously, and I will seriously think about this." And he did. He spent the next couple of months doing some exploration, both through his political team and in his own conversations, in reaching out to people that he wanted to pick their brains about what it might entail. He spoke with George W. Bush, who called him to talk about it, not to urge him to run or not to run, but simply to walk him through the kinds of questions he ought to be asking and answering. And so there was a procession of people who were, you know, imploring him to run. I think in the end, he never really changed his mind. He didn't think that 2012 was the right year for him, and he never really changed that. But the story of how he got to that point in the end is quite a fascinating story.
And the pressure that continued as a vice presidential candidate, as possible.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. He was on the final short list of contenders to become Mitt Romney's vice president. And at one point in July of 2012, Governor Romney called him. There was a particular issue that was nettlesome, which could have affected the fundraising of the whole campaign because of some particular financial regulations that affect the governor of New Jersey and any sitting governor and the bond underwriters. But so the Governor Romney said at one point in the conversation, "Would you be prepared to resign to become my vice president?" Christie wasn't prepared to do that, but he took that comment from Governor Romney as a sign that he was in fact the first choice, and that it was kind of his decision to say whether he would or not go on the ticket. In talking to people around Governor Romney, it's clear they have a different view of what that conversation actually meant, that it was not tantamount to an offer of the vice presidency, only an indication that he was under serious consideration, but that there were some potential obstacles. Though one person close to Governor Romney said, I can understand why Governor Christie may have come away from that conversation thinking he was the number one choice. But in the end, as we all know, it was Paul Ryan that Governor Romney decided he wanted at his side in the campaign and potentially in the White House.
Of course, for journalists covering campaigns, I know it can be very difficult to get the information that you want out of a campaign out of a candidate. And then there's some who just don't shut up. And it seems to me that Newt Gingrich was that guy for you. He was just... he was...
Well, I'm not sure it's exclusive to me. He's...
But you had that rap with him, right? You were able to. He was very free in sharing his opinions as to what was going on.
Well, here's let me just back up two steps, and that is, I asked every campaign if they would make available the candidate to talk to me as the campaign unfolded on an embargoed basis for to be held until the book came out, and my reason for wanting to do that is twofold. One is, you know, I think we sometimes get too, you know, fascinated by this strategist or that strategist or, you know, internal campaign machinations. And in fact, these races are really about the candidates.
Right.
And so the extent to which you can get the candidate's voice into the story and the candidate's reflections, I think it just makes for a richer and more, you know, compelling story. And in some ways, more historically accurate. What I wanted to do was talk to people in real time, because after the fact, you know, their memories are not as sharp about particular events. And so I asked all of them if they would do that. Very few were willing to do it with any regularity, or if at all. The former speaker was. I mean, he and I have, you know, I've covered him for a long time.
Sure.
So he knew me, and also he's, you know, as a historian, he's intrigued by the idea of, you know, participating in a project that is, you know, in part at least an early draft of history. So we started talking in the summer of 2011. There was a long gap in the fall when we didn't talk, but then we began to talk again in the winter. And you know, some of the interviews were fascinating because I caught him in a moment right after the Florida primary when he had been decimated by the Romney campaign. And he was so angry. I mean, he was so angry at the Romney campaign. It was just, and there's some quotes in the book that you know, that you can't really say on radio, but,
right.
But that show you the depth of his anger at that point. And then I caught him in April, just before the Wisconsin primary, when it was clear that Governor Romney was going to be the nominee, and it was clear that Gingrich was going to eventually drop out, though it took another month or 5 weeks. And I reminded him that he had told me in that earlier interview that he never thought Romney would become the nominee, that the party would never accept him. And he, you know, as is with Speaker Gingrich, he said, well, look, I was wrong. I was wrong about that. And he said, I've learned a lot about Governor Romney through this process, and he has a resilience. And he also said a ruthlessness that he said, you know, served him well in the Republican nomination battle. And more important, he thought would serve him well in a general election against a very tough Obama campaign team.
I asked you this question about Governor Romney's campaign, and at what point did he feel that he was losing the election? At what point do you think that President Obama felt that they were in good shape? And they had, you write about this extensively, and it's a great chapter in the book about the disaster that was the Denver debate, and kind of a wake up call for the entire campaign. At what point did they start to get their footing again?
Well, relatively soon thereafter. I mean, I think they were always confident that they would win, but they were always aware that this was going to be a potentially very difficult election. I mean, they knew that their most serious opponent was the state of the economy, and that to some extent his reelection hopes were held hostage to movements in the economy. The Denver debate was no question a jolt to them. And for a couple of days, they were carefully and nervously monitoring movements in public opinion polls, and in their own, you know, enormous research and polling operation that they were doing. What they saw, you know, immediately afterwards was the race begin to tighten, and they saw it begin to tighten a second day, and that, you know, that made them quite nervous. By a few days after that debate, what they saw was that the race had begun to stabilize again. And as they analyzed what had happened, what they concluded was that President Obama's level of support had not, in fact, dipped in any significant way. What had happened was that people who had kind of peeled off of Romney after the 47% comment had begun to come back and rally back around Romney. So their feeling was, you know, 5 or 6 days after the Denver debate, that they were kind of back to the status quo where they had been before the 47% comment, which is to say ahead, but not dramatically ahead. But they also knew that if they had a second debate like the first debate, they could then be in real trouble because there was demoralization among some of the Democrats as a result of that first debate. People were shook up by the president's performance, and they knew that he had to have a good performance and that Joe Biden had to have a good performance against Paul Ryan in the vice presidential debate. Joe, there's a funny anecdote. Biden arrives in Kentucky for the vice presidential debate, and he's in his limousine, and he's taking a phone call, and he gets out of the limousine and comes up to one of his advisors and says, I know we're in trouble. And the advisor says, what do you mean? He said, I know we're in trouble because the president of the United States just said to me, Joe, be yourself. And he said, he said in 4 years, he's never told me that. So.
And you know, this is I love this book, by the way. It's very, and I love your work, and it's so well reported, and it's so fascinating to me. But really, Joe Biden is sort of the rock, isn't he? I mean, it's fascinating that the relationship that these two men have and the importance that he plays in the campaign and ultimately in the administration.
It's true, and you know, there were moments in 2011 when there. Be these rumors or this speculation, mostly in the media, that perhaps that the president was going to dump Joe Biden and ask Hillary Clinton to be his running mate. You know, every time this popped up, whenever you would immediately talk to, you know, one of the president's closest people, whether it was David Axelrod or David Plouffe or whoever, Robert Gibbs, you know, they would always just immediately say, there is nothing to this. He likes Vice President Biden. He values his relationship with Biden. He values Biden's advice. You know, Biden is somebody who is prepared to give his own view of things. And, you know, as we know, when they were debating about what to do about Afghanistan in 2009, Joe Biden was in a different place than the Pentagon people were. And so there is a very close relationship. And, you know, Joe Biden, you know, the president, as we know, is not a schmoozer. He doesn't like to, you know, schmooze with politicians. And so Joe Biden often gets that assignment, particularly around Capitol Hill, and he's extremely good at it. I mean, he has, you know, 3+ decades of relationships in the Senate. He understands the rhythms. He's got personal friendships. He does a lot of that. And he also has this capacity, you know, to be an old-fashioned Democrat, to rally the base. There's great affection for President Obama, but he's a somewhat more standoffish figure. And Joe Biden is just, you know, he's right there constantly. And so that relationship has been very, very good. So the idea that there was any question that he was going to remain on the ticket was always fanciful.
The subtitle of the book is Obama versus Romney and the Future of Elections in America. What do you think we learn from this election that will change things in the future? Because you certainly write about much needed reforms in our political system.
Joe, I think you can look at this from two different angles. One is the sort of the process of how campaigns are run, and I think that we saw things in this 2012 election that will become centerpieces of all future campaigns. One is, we've alluded to it, the enormous amount of research, the data-driven work of the Obama campaign in undergirding their Get Out the Vote operation, the amount of work that they did, and the use and exploitation of social media, of modeling, of gathering and integrating data to make as efficient as possible the process of identifying and getting voters out is very important. You know, the rise of super PACs is significant. Did that decide the election? No, I don't think so. But it was clearly influential in the Republican primaries, and it is the new way of the world. It's where political talent and political money go if they're not directly in the campaigns. The role of debates is important. The the proliferation of polling. All of these are important. The rise of Twitter as a medium that in fact creates and hardens conventional wisdom in a millisecond. All of these affect the way campaigns have to operate. So that's one way of looking at it. I think the other way, and one that we sometimes pay less attention to than we should, are these big sort of glacial forces that change our politics. And I think what we saw in 2012 was a reminder of how important those are. And I think there were a couple. Obviously the economy is always important, and may have been as decisive as anything in this race. But the demographic changes that are underway in this country and have been underway for some time have had a profound effect on our politics, and it has helped to make Republicans at more of a disadvantage in a presidential election than they were 20 years ago. The fact of the rise of the non-white voting bloc in the election, and the Republicans so far inability to get a better share of that is significant. The other thing that I write about a lot in this book is the red-blue divide. I mean, we think of it almost as a cliche, but right. I think it's so important in understanding why our politics are the way they are, whether it's the negativity or the paralysis on Capitol Hill, or just the general shape of the way people come to making a decision about how they're going to vote. I mean, red America is probably a little redder than it was before, and blue America is a little bluer, and so the gulf between the two becomes more difficult to bridge. And I think that until somebody or some forces change that, that's part of the politics that we're in going forward.
Dan Balz is a longtime Washington Post columnist. His new book is Collision 2012, chief correspondent for the Washington Post. I'd be derelict in my duty if I didn't ask you what your thoughts are on the new boss.
Well, like everybody else here, this has been a shocking week and one that's produced a lot of different emotions. I mean, I was stunned that the Graham family decided to sell the Washington Post. I've been here 35 years, and I honestly never thought I would see that day. So I was stunned when the news broke, and I was sad to see the Grahams leave the Washington Post. I mean, they've been terrific stewards. They have defended and encouraged great journalism for as long as they've had the Washington Post, and it's unnerving when you think about them not being part of it. Jeff Bezos has obviously been an enormous success in the world of Amazon and technology and everything, and as a result of that, I think people are hopeful that he may have some fresh ideas about how to take an institution like the Washington Post and put it on a more secure economic platform going forward. So we are hopeful that will happen. I think we all know that change is inevitable. We've gone through a lot of changes already, so the idea that there will be change is not a surprise, and we hope that it will be productive and valuable change.
And hopefully it always comes down to content, which is why your reporting and a book like this is so important, and that we hope that never changes.
Well, thank you. I think that's right. I mean, the great thing about the Washington Post is the quality of the journalism and the talent of the people who produce it, and that hasn't changed in 35 years that I've been here, and hopefully will not change going forward.
Dan Balz is the new book is Collision 2012, Obama versus Romney and the Future of Elections in America. And you don't have any predictions for 2016, do you?
No, I don't. I've been so wrong so many times. I'm not going out on that limb this early.
But it's ever fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it's already because the players are still there. I mean, Chris Christie obviously is still in it, and we don't know what the Joe Biden Hillary Clinton saga is going to end up being.
No, I think all we know at this point is that the 2016 campaign is likely to be a robust and fascinating and perhaps unpredictable ride for the next several years.
Well, the name of the book is Collision 2012, Obama versus Romney and the Future of Elections in America. The book is published by Viking. Dan Balls, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. I certainly appreciate your great reporting, and I appreciate you joining us on the program and talking about it.
Thank you. I'm grateful to you for giving me the time.
Best of luck on the book and your future efforts. Again, Collision 2012, Obama versus Romney and the Future of Elections in America. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.